October 19, 1983, Jan Law interviewed by Kay Brindle in his office in Long Beach.
There wasn't any petroleum company.
Okay, because I've had a chance to go there a couple of times, even to the one in Long Beach. There seems to be a place where people hang out and talk to each other about which well they're doing wine and.
That's right. Oh, well, I was going to say something. When we talked about Ashton Taylor.
Yes.
And you said with a grin, well, they played cards during the afternoon. Well, let me say that it would be something of the atmosphere that you saw there at the Petroleum Club. It never had anything approaching the atmosphere of the gambling joints at Gardena, which are grim.
Yeah,
it was a very quiet thing, and those people who play gin rummy all afternoon are either retired, semi-retired, or say have a business of their own, and they don't work at it too much. So it's a men's club, same as the petroleum club.
Yeah, I never thought of it as a den of iniquity, a serious gambling or anything. I just thought of it as a social center.
Yeah.
And that this was a service that she provided so that they could have an excuse to talk to each other. More
yeah, and play gin rummy.
Yeah.
That's right.
Bob Story.
And there are people that are semi-retired, like the people at the petroleum club. They sit and talk to each other year in, year out.
Yes, right. The person who has taken me to the petroleum club a couple of times is Saul Alexander. I don't know if you know him.
Oh, you betcha. I'm very fond of Saul Alexander, and I love his Mexican Gold, you know about that, where he was maybe nationwide an expert on minting in rural and outpost Mexico.
Oh, yeah, I think he was. He's explained to me what he does, and I think I understand what he does and used to do as a consultant, but I'm not so clear on what you do.
Well, I can tell you, in case Saul, for umpteen years, was a buyer of crude for small refineries.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he's always, forever and ever, been in buying and procuring crude oil from various sources. So he's an expert on what it's worth. Well, fundamentally, what this office does, we have, I think, 12 accounts in which we are royalty representatives and joint venture. In the case of royalty, the simplest way you would say is that if you had a farm and they discovered oil on it and you thought that the oil company was gypping you on royalties and not paying you what you would do, you would hire Jan Law. Now that's way over, that's simplistic. But these people, there are 22 heirs of Fred H. Dixie. They are an account. They have a royalty and a working interest. Paul Snedden is shark at discovering overcharges, inadvertent overcharges or mistakes. And we put in what's called an audit claim every once in a while for $30,000 or $50,000 and get it, more than make our fee. Continuously, well, at infrequent intervals, the lease comes up for a lease amendment. And we've lived with it and studied it. We are paid quarterly or annually retainers. By mostly, like this is the 22 heirs. In the case of the Alameda Land Company, that small parcel out in the middle of the Navy swamps. You see some oil wells out there called RCU, and they have a sign. There are 45 descendants of the Bixbys and the Hellmans. The Boats of Gun Club have 330 descendants of the original 40 families. There they have royalty and a carried working interest, and we got for them a little while ago a audit payment of $181,000 due to error and misunderstanding. When our dear clients die, we make appraisals for estate tax purposes or for gift tax, where they, and that appraisal pay enough money to make this other, which is not very remunerative, but it's low stress for the most part. It is interesting. Paul has been doing it. He's 65 and I'm 75, for Christ's sake. And I think we enjoy each other. And we'd rather do this. Oh, I come to work at 9 o'clock and leave at 3:30. He comes to work about 7:30 and leaves at 3:30 because this place closes down. And I don't take clients if they're one bit unpleasant. And you might say that I have a kind of a cavalier attitude towards working for a living. And I am really, on a very modest scale, I'm independent. I don't have to work. Therefore, I don't mind working because I don't have to work. So there's some kind of corollary there, I guess.
Yeah. You talked about working for Mr. Garrison, that he managed the Hellman interest. Can I assume from that all the Hellmans do with that property is produce oil from?
There are surface developments going on. They're getting subdivided and building stuff's going on.
So he managed that for them also?
Pardon?
Did he manage that for them, or is that somebody else's? Almost
always that's done on a, the Hellmans themselves wouldn't divide it. They would make the deal that dedicated this for housing or so on. Then a builder takes over and somebody, usually their lawyers in San Francisco, would mastermind the deal. But,
one of the other things that you mentioned on the previous page is working with Bill Ball as an expert witness.
You're a brave man, man. You're a brave man. You're a brave man.
What do I do?
No, just to tackle a job like that.
Oh.
I'm congratulating you.
What kind of cases did you work on with
him? Certainly in your maps and facts. No. Chaps and maps.
Yes.
You ran into Crawford and Hiles. They were the most typical Cherry Avenue promoters, the 40 thieves of Cherry Avenue, of which descendants from C.C. Julian in the Rush days, and Oil, the book, Sinclair Lewis, Upton Sinclair. They were scofflaws, scallywags, a few other things. And the first case, they got a lease at Kiyama and drilled within 14 feet of the common property line, Whitstock, and had independent surveys. There wasn't any hanky-panky about the survey. It was a certified location, I believe. Homer Dulin, that you must have met in your... He was a surveyor, and a surveyor on Signal Hill did a lot of work. He laid out the property lines in a big rancho that had never been sectionalized, never been fenced. There was a confusion in the use of the words north and due north. North means swing an angle from an existing line, and due north is a meridian which converges at the North Pole, and north lines are parallel. Due north lines are convergent as meridians at the North Pole. When they corrected Homer Doolin's survey, it threw the well into 3 feet of apparent trespass because they moved the property line over 17 feet, and he was certified at 14 feet. And Atlantic Richfield, with their big trial lawyer, Jackson Chance, and by William Myers, you know, is the most prestigious of all.
Yes.
Jackson Chance was their most trial lawyer. They had two or three expert witnesses. And here comes Jan Law and Joe Ball to defend Crawford Hiles, subsurface trespass. I was a statistician. I am a statistician. And the thing would look like this. The well stood still. This was Homer Doolin's. This is the correct line. I proved to the satisfaction of the judge that there was a circle of uncertainty around that bottom hole because we were reading little compasses and films, and I derived it, in which the radius of that circle of uncertainty was greater than the property line. So the judge, Judge Bostock, said, "Mr. Law, I'm beginning to see this lawsuit. Do you mean to say that this, you don't know whether this oil well is over here in trespass or back here where it isn't in trespass, that this is Atlantic Richfield and this is Crawford and Hiles, and you don't know whether that well is here on Crawford and Hiles or there on Atlantic Richfield?" I said, "Yes, Your Honor." He said, "I'm beginning to see this case because under the law it's up to Atlantic Richfield to prove trespass, and according to the findings of Mr. Law, they have not proved trespass." Jackson Chance, as far as I can see, the trial lawyer, my God, was he prepared, couldn't roll with the punches. He was flabbergasted. None of his experts, he had two or three people that were much more eminent than I was, but none of them ever told him about this possibility. And when he was hitting between the eyes, he staggered around and never really came through, and we won the case. And people came up and said, "Well, that's a miracle. You could never win that." And part of it was that killed me. I said, "But there's a rule on expert witnesses that I cannot be an expert witness cannot be cross-examined on any subject that's not brought up in direct testimony." I said, "Don't ask me about the probability or possibility, because I said this in general is 70% of the area and this is 30%. And therefore, according to civil law, the preponderance of evidence is that it's in trespass. And not criminal, this wouldn't be beyond a shadow of a doubt, beyond a shadow of a doubt. It isn't in trespass. It could be here, good there, but what a little I know about it. So don't ask me." He said, "Okay, but I'll tell you, I'm going to do. And he, at this critical point, when the point was brought up by Melvin and Meyer, he quoted St. Thomas Aquinas, so help me God, and said that in the absence of knowledge, you don't know the fore and the aft. If you are ignorant, you don't know this, and you can't. If you're ignorant, you're ignorant. If you don't know the length of a piece of rope, you don't know whether it's longer or shorter than what you're told. This is ignorance. So this is ignorance. Whether or not the judge was a Catholic, and whether or not the laws are so medieval that whatever the sayings and finding of St. Thomas Aquinas would have to do with Crawford and Hiles and the Lab at Richfield, I don't know. That was one. The other one, Crawford and Hiles. Get back here, turn in, and survey. Now, this time there was hanky-panky because they finally, ridiculously, had to sell the well, did sell it, and at that time they went back into it and surveyed it and found it 350 feet in trespass. Joe said, well, we got another Crawford and Hiles. Come on, let's go, let's go. Oh, by the way, I've been fortunate in my life to serve an apprenticeship under a few terrific people. Joe Ball is one of them. He spoiled me the rest of my life for for lawyers in general. He's beautiful. I said, Joe, don't be ridiculous. 350 proven, yes. We're going to gun them off. Yes, indeed. Come on, let's go to work. And I said, well, Joe, I'll do it. That's fine. I don't know. It so happens that there was on the market at that time an instrument. This was all done with a plumb bob and a survey instrument. It was a Kodak, a camera, and a light, and a plumb bob, and a compass. And the compass tells you the direction. The plumb bob tells you the amount of deviation from the vertical, a vertical hole, slightly, and more. And there was a pump. You could mismake the parts. And it was about 6-1 that if your true inclination was 30 degrees, this thing would read on a mismating of the parts very much less. Hutch, I can give you your parts.
There we go.
I can gun club operate. Oh,
then
where's my sketch map? On the other side?
No, good.
And so, I correlated these two things and found that this factor of 6, in other words, if this was 5 degrees, why, this would be 30 degrees, and if this if actually it was 30 degrees, it was red 5 degrees. So this showed them on their property. And I showed the fact that these two surveys were the same survey, made in the same hole, and that the only difference was that these parts here were inadvertently mismated.
Yes.
And the judge found for them. Crawford and Hiles got off. And people say, impossible, 350 feet is in trespass and you got them off. It's impossible. And oh my goodness, they had a party on Linden. They were on Linden. And Joe Ball and Jan Law were the miracle boys for doing that. And I must say, Joe Ball and I would rehearse, and talk about the connotation of words. We were most meticulous in the words to tell the truth, but whose connotations were definitely benevolent rather than, something.
Yes.
And we had... maybe together, in which I enjoyed them. Oh, In these cases, in case of Santa Barbara, on the first thing, we lived at the same hotel, same room. We had the same, shared a room, of all things. And we had all kinds of talks, and in Bakersfield was just about the same. We, the other one, we stayed at the same hotel, I forgot, the same room enough. And I really, and when Joe Ball wrote to Jan Law, the impeccable expert witness, I guess, in the height of my immodesty and boasting and so on, well, I think he really meant it. I believe he really meant it, that we had had some spectacular wins. And evidently, again, I think this is probably immodest, that I came through to the judge and jury as an honest witness. They, I was honest. It so happens that I didn't go into whether or not this thing had been mismated advertently. But it wasn't up. I couldn't be a mind reader. I couldn't see that. And Joe Ball was very careful again. He exposed me on direct testimony to, only to those things that I should not be exposed to on indirect. And that was part of his masterminding. And those were the two most spectacular. The other were pretty interesting every now and then, but not as spectacular. And I worked with other people there. Clark Haganis was also in part. And I worked with not George Hart, but Clarence Hunt.
You were talking about the other lawyers that you worked with?
You mean in time past?
Yes. Were there any spectacular cases like the ones with Joe Ball? Trespass or...
Nothing even holds a candle to Joe Ball.
Surveying was pretty well established by the time you got out of school. So there weren't, unless you assembled the tool incorrectly or something, you couldn't really argue about whether a survey was correct or not, could you?
You mean, we did. There was a unique circumstances. If you are familiar with subsurface survey, Alexander Anderson was the father.
Yes.
And he had a unique tool that had tumblers and photographic screens, and he was a former teacher of mathematics at Fullerton High School.
Oh.
And was invented it. As time went along, you called him Honest John.
H. John Eastman.
Huh?
H. John Eastman.
Developed the present so-called single shot that had the pendulum, the compass, the electric, the light, and the Kodak, and took a picture single shot. Alexander Anderson developed a single shot. It was a very poor tool. And Alexander Anderson sold out to Lane Wells, and Lane Wells just sold these instruments as more or less like scrap iron or junk, and two small surveyors, bottom hole surveyors, bought them and established the service. And it was only the Alexander Anderson's poorly designed single shot, which was a takeoff on Eastman, which got into the market, of which uniquely among all the tools had this ability to mismate the parts. And whether or not Crawford and Hiles were skilled enough, or whether or not their directional survey was skilled and knowledgeable enough, you can draw your own inference. Did they know that this tool could be misaligned, mismated, and could be so programmed, so treated, to to turn in an apparently very honest survey, and a survey that was made in the hole, and yet showed them on their property where actually they were 350 feet beyond the property line. I don't know, but this came about by the odd circumstance of Alexander Anderson, one, departing from his historic survey instrument and making an a single shot in imitation of Eastman, of Alexander Anderson being sold to Lane Wells and Lane Wells getting rid of the instruments at something like scrap iron prices, that gave birth to this unique situation, which has little or nothing to do with your statement that you could or couldn't do something at this late stage of development.
Yes.
You could, because the situation was there. One of my memories I cherish was Alexander Anderson was the most fatherly, paternal guy you can possibly imagine. And as a high school teacher, he was loved by the students. And he had this organization. I guess everybody loved everybody in the organization, but they were given to unlimited distraction of each other, and the word discipline only flowed from love and kindness and so on. It didn't flow from anything approaching a Prussian discipline. So it came time to finally read this very elaborate set and to compile a survey within time. So he, as the only expedient, the way he could do, he would take these two people who were developed and he would lock them up in a room with a little bit of whole passageway where he could pass maybe a glass of water through or a message on. But that thing stayed locked, and nobody, no matter what, they couldn't come out of that room until the survey was finished. And here they all were. Everybody was loving each other and affectionate, and he was fatherly and sweet, and there's more to the story about his invention was an amazing invention, just amazing. And it was a picture which ought to be captured for the annals of the petroleum industry as the first subsurface survey and his instrument. I shouldn't tell you because you have to do it with diagrams and maybe you should know more about it than I do. But it was a remarkable little unique chapter in the annals of California. And I told you that you could find all over the world people who had learned the oil business on Signal Hill, and there were tools and methods developed on Signal Hill that spread throughout the world. We were much ahead of Texas technique in those days because Texas was always drilling shallow and didn't have the challenges, and we had deeper and other reasons why. Obviously now that we are very much back country cousins to Houston oil industry. Not then.